This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, this is Todd Pratt, former New York Met. I'm here to talk with Jake Brown.
And welcome back to The Jake Brown Show on Radio.com, iTunes, and Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter at Jake Brown Show, and follow me at Jake Brown Radio. Joining us now is a guy who I called out for not being real because a friend of mine told me that it wasn't the real Todd Pratt on Twitter, and I was disappointed because there was a fake Latrell Sprewell out there that has duped people, and a guy that I ended up interviewing, and it wasn't Latrell Sprewell, so we never aired the interview. But it is the real Todd Pratt, former Mets great, former Philly, former Brave, former one-time Cub. You can follow him on Twitter at ToddPratt07, and the manager of the Greensboro Grasshoppers with the Miami Marlins. Todd, appreciate you coming on, man. How you doing?
Hey, thanks, Jake.
I came out guns blazing.
Yeah, you did. But that's all right. You know, I didn't have that blue dot. And obviously, I didn't really get serious on Twitter till someone said, hey, once you get certified, and we all know that they've shut that down through some things like you gotten fooled by. So I appreciate it. We're all cool. We've talked via Twitter, texting, so it's all good now.
Yeah, and you never know on Twitter. It's amazing how many people make fake personas.
I gotcha.
It would be odd to make a fake Todd Pratt persona, but hey, you never know in today's day and age. The Greensboro Grasshoppers, man, you're in your second season there, correct? How are you feeling about the squad this year?
Yeah, well, you know, it was a great first season. I really appreciate Miami giving me an opportunity to get back to managing. Can't really say how the club's going to be. You know, that's determined in spring training. But I look at last year's draft and some of these trades that have happened, which you know about. Mm-hmm. So we should have pretty solid staff and position players, you know, probably the second, third round picks, probably have A-Rod's nephew there and kid from Kentucky playing second base, but that's all determined the end of March. So whoever we have, we'll do what we can, and I'll hopefully help them follow the dream.
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to look at it. If you're a Miami Marlins fan, You're not too happy because the team is probably not going to be very good this year. But on your end, they do have prospects and they do have some youth in the farm system waiting. So I would imagine for you guys and for you as a manager of the single-A squad, you look at it kind of in a positive note and look at the future versus what the team might do this year.
Yeah, I just, you know, the Jeter group and Sherman, I mean, they're obviously, you know, I can't say enough about, you know, Jeter. He's done everything he can and as a player, and now he's getting back into it. He knows baseball. I think with the asking price that Lori asked for, I just think that they wanted their passion to have a team. They might have overpaid a little bit, and they just, you know, saw some things where they needed to cut, and tough decisions, but I think there's a plan, and I think if we just let this plan go involve the next couple years. You've seen other clubs do it, the Phillies, the Astros. You just gotta let it work out, and maybe they won't be as good as they can be or will be, but I think they're gonna surprise. They got some players still there, and they got some pitching. They're not big names, but you know, I don't see, like some people predict, a 100 loss season. I don't see that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. I'm hoping the Mets fare better against them than the past, and this would be the year to hopefully do it because, for some reason, the Marlins just always seem to beat the Mets in big spots as the Nationals do. But you expect that with the Nationals. You don't expect the Mets to lose to the Marlins a lot.
I think with the Mets, even though I'm a Marlin and I'm loyal to them, I still have Mets, and I still love talking baseball. And, you know, I was just a fancy camp at the end of January, 2 weeks out there with the Mets, and a lot of the guys were there were, you know, kind of cried and complained about, oh, we need this and we need that. I'm like, you know, if that rotation's healthy, you actually have seven guys that can compete for those five spots. If that rotation's healthy, two of those guys go in the bullpen, you got Familia. I mean, that was one of the best staffs in baseball if they're healthy, and that has been the big question for them.
And that's the big if, and you're right. I mean, adding Vargas gives them a lot of depth here, and it gives them the ability, as much as he said he doesn't want to, it gives them the ability to put Wheeler in the bullpen, who I think would thrive in the bullpen in a one-inning role with this kind of stuff and the gas that he throws. I think Wheeler needs to maybe make the switch, but you're right. I mean, if healthy, I think here's the thing, Todd, and you know this, you know Mets fans, and you don't want to come into the season with too many expectations, because last year I predicted them to win the World Series over the Red Sox, and they fell flat on their face. So if you go in with less expectations, I guess you expect the worst a little bit less.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I get Mets fans, you know, or they're East Coast folks. I loved it there. I mean, they're going to let you know, and you just got to be able to handle the pressure, and that's it. And it's their right to do that, you know. You do well, they're going to love you. If you don't do well, you're going to hear it from them. But that's what it's all about. I never understood how some, you know, guys just can't play in New York. I thrived off it. You know, obviously I wasn't an everyday guy, but when I did get in there, I mean, I loved it, you know.
And you did play half the season in 2000 and 2001 and technically 99, I guess, as well, 71 games. That stretch for you with the Mets, I'm sure you've talked about it a billion times, but those teams were special. Me, when I was eight when you hit the game five homer. I was a little kid. I mean, I knew nothing then. So that was my first year as a Mets fan, that playoff run. So those had to be some memories that you're going to cherish the rest of your life from 99 and 2000.
Almost definitely. You know, really, I started there in 97, I guess, in 2001. And, you know, those teams, the 99 and 2000, 2001 team, even though that kind of suffered that 2001, it was just all about the teammates and the personalities on that team. You know, Al Lott or Mike Piazza, John Oliver, Edgar Alfonso. I mean, I could just go name a name, and it just, well, the greatest thing about that team was we were together. That clubhouse was great. It wasn't sections of the clubhouse where I have been on different teams. It seems like it's that way. It's the older guys with the younger guys, and the all different ethnic groups, you know, we all did things together. I mean, that's why we all believed in each other, and it was great. It was a great time. Great time in New York.
Yeah, and then those teams were special. And I said game five, it was actually game four. You hit the home run against the Diamondbacks. Playing behind Piazza, were you guys close on and off the field? I mean, he seemed like he was a pretty strong leader, but were you guys close?
Yeah, you know. Definitely, I guess the best way to put it, he knew I respected him. Even when it was his Dodgers, I talked to him. But I think he really came around, especially being him as a starting catcher, and probably went through so many backups, to be honest with you. I think he understood that I had his back, and you know, he was actually excited when I did well, and that really made me feel good. He wasn't very vocal, but I could tell in his eyes and his reactions that he appreciated his day off. How about that?
And I mean, you had a great year as a backup that year. 378 OBP, 8 homers, 25 ribbies, 275 average. Not too shabby. When you were playing as a backup, were you ever like, when you were in a hot streak, were you like, man, I wish I was out there every day? Did you appreciate the backup role? What was going through your head?
Well, I appreciate having a job, first of all. Mm-hmm. But secondly, this comes up a lot of times, this question, and it just seems like, you know, my whole career I backed up. Every catcher I backed up, Phillies, Cubs, Braves, Mets, were all-stars.
Yep.
You know, it all started with Darren Dalton, Mike Lieberthal, Rick Wilkins in Chicago at the point, just coming off, you know, a great rookie season. You know, Mike Piazza,
Todd Hundley,
Johnny Estrada, Todd Hundley. There you go, Brian McCann. There's the guys that backed up. So I always feel sometimes I, you know, especially after that 2000 year, I thought if you get traded, but then I think that business wise, why would you trade up the best backup catcher at that point to somebody else? If our starter goes down, we have somebody that we can know until either he does the job or we can get somebody else. So it's definitely business. And I never, you know, sometimes I'd be like, God, imagine if I got 500-600 at bats. You know, Bobby Cox told me one time, he said, Ty, if you played every day, you'd be a 25 home run hitter. So, you know, but I don't look back at that. I'm happy that I was a bat, you know. I was happy I had a job.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I mean, you played 14, 15 years. I mean, that is very tough to do in today's age, Todd. So I think that.
I didn't complain.
Yeah,
I didn't complain, and I was a teammate, mm-hmm. and I was a leader in the clubhouse, and I didn't complain.
And it's like, I compare it like a backup quarterback, I think, in the NFL is the best job in sports because you fill in when necessary.
God.
And if you have one great game, or let alone five, you might just be the highest paid player in the sport, like Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right. It's a great job.
It's amazing. Great job. Like, Josh McCown has hung around for an endless amount of years, and the guy's made a boatload of money because he's had a couple of good games here and there. So the backup spot isn't that bad. You don't have to worry about the wear and tear on your knees as a catcher. You could relax and play a couple times a week and still make a good chunk of change. So it's definitely not
Bobby,
a bad gig.
Bobby V said it best. He one time he whispered to me and said, "Todd, you know why you're good? You're reliable." Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that made me feel good when Bobby said that. You know, and like I said, I think. Even though the fans wanted to see Big Mike on there on Sundays or Thursday afternoon game, I think they felt the Mets were in good hands with me catching that day.
Yeah, and I'll admit, Mike Piazza was my favorite player of all time. But we're lucky we had a good backup on. Right now, the Mets catching situation is shaky with Travis d'Arnaud and Kevin Plawecki. What do you think of what they have behind the backstop now?
Well, Travis, I think he's... He could be one of the top guys. He just needs to stay healthy and grind it out. You know, I just feel they're going to be a tough club. You know, I just think I think Travis has had some injuries. He's got some pop. You know, just needs to stay healthy. That's all.
Yeah, and he's had all sorts of injuries from concussion to elbow to knee. I mean,
part
of his body has been hurt. It's unbelievable. I mean, he showed potential that he could hit for some power if he does stay healthy. He could be a 20-homer guy, which the Mets would love. The Mets are going to have a lot of power, not a lot of speed. I think they might be last in the league in stolen bases with their lineup right now, depending on when Conforto gets back. They're going to be slow and going to hope for a lot of homers. One of those guys is Todd Frazier. I mean, you look at him as a vocal leader in that clubhouse and a good signing for them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he just, you know, obviously, I think they got a good man with Todd, obviously, with the Reds and all the teams he's been with. He's always been a good clubhouse guy. I think that's what helps bring things together, kind of like Lenny Harris was when we got him. I mean, he brought things together, you know, in that clubhouse and You know, I'll be rooting for the Marlins when we play against them just because of my job. But, you know, obviously, you know, there's still that blue and orange in my blood and, you know, great times in New York.
Yeah, you played, I mean, for the Mets, the Phillies, the Braves, and now you're coaching with the Marlins. All you need to do is coach for the Nationals, right? And you got the whole division.
people ask me, how did you never go to the Marlins? A player that played that long and spent this whole time in the East. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
Yeah, that is wild. But, hey, it's not a bad thing. Did you know in the moment when you tackled Robin Ventura that it was going to be a single?
This would be a real quick story. First of all, I couldn't believe that Bobby put me into pinch hit down by one run with two outs in that game. I get the walk, so my adrenaline's fired up, you know, I'm going. And then you start getting back into the base running mode. You say, okay, all we need is a hit. I got to touch second base and game's over. You know, I always say, you know, it was a rainy night, kind of mist, and raining, foggy. And usually when Robin hit home runs, we used to call him Helium Boy. the team, because when he hit them, he just hit them high, and then it's like they never came down.
Mm-hmm.
That one just looked like a line drive in the gap, and Shea's huge. I mean, I'm like, okay, base hit. He ain't going to get a double because as soon as the run scores, game's over. So just make sure I tag first, second, and grab him. I was so fired up. I didn't know what he was doing, giving a cheer or trying to wave me on. Obviously, after the fact, he was like, dude, keep running. I felt bad at that point. Well, I didn't feel bad at that point because I was fired up. But after the fact, when I got in the clubhouse, I was like, oh, damn.
Did everyone realize it was a single? Because I don't think everyone realized that you have to get around. And I don't think in the moment people care, but were people like, come on, Todd?
Yeah, oh, no, I know. As a fan, and we're watching the game, because you're seeing it, I didn't even look at the ball once he hit it. I didn't even look over. Usually, if there's a different situation, you're looking over your right shoulder, seeing where it's in the gap, and you pick up the base coach before you hit second base. And I was just like, man, just tag second base, and game over. But, Robin still to this day gives me a little gruff, but, I'm sorry I took that away, but heck, I'm more sorry. I thought I was going to have a hit on me. Vegas, I don't know what they were going to do.
Yeah, and that was one of the greatest moments in Mets history, the Grand Slam single in history. So, hey, you were part of a historic moment. And then
a couple of them, actually. The home run is the top 10, and so was that. So I didn't mean to be in the second one.
You'll take it, though. Unfortunately, the next game, the Kenny Rogers walk, and that broke my eight-year-old heart. That was...
I was catching, Bobby brought me in for defense, and mm-hmm.
What happened there? Did he just lose it?
Kenny did a great job. We probably wouldn't have been there without him, and it just was one thing that, I prompted, to be honest with you, Andrew was probably a dangerous hitter. We could get him out on the right pitch. We just didn't make the right pitch. It wasn't even close from the tenth. I think it comes to a point where I'm trying to do more than I should, as a pitcher, with the bases loaded, and it just it didn't work out well for us.
Todd Pratt joining us on the Jake Brown Show for a couple more minutes. Follow him on Twitter at ToddPratt07. He is the manager of the Greensboro Grasshoppers, the single-A affiliate of the Miami Marlins. What do you think, Todd, of the new pace of play rules and the limit? I know you tweeted about you never thought a game was too long, but now there's a limit of six times that that you could visit a pitcher during the game besides injury. What do you think about that?
Sounds like the Mets pitching coach is already kind of a little upset about it. Be honest with you, I never really counted how many times there were meetings on the mound with the pitching coach. But, he got sign stealing. I don't know necessarily if that's a great argument, because the pitcher catcher should be able to handle that. I'm old school. If we're trying to quicken up the game, 5 or 6 minutes, does it really matter? Mm-hmm. I make an argument that how about less commercials between pitching changes, mm-hmm. And I know it's all about the money. You gotta, these people gotta get paid. That's what helps baseball.
And you got to have T-shirt tosses, man. You got to have the T-shirt launch in between innings.
How about letting the stay on the game and let them get his 8 pitches, and let the fans see the kid warming up. But, you could charge more for the commercial and have less commercial. The sponsors are still going to pay that price.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think if we're trying to knock 5-6 minutes off the game, it's not a big deal. And it's like I said, some of the people that didn't see my tweet is, not once have I ever played or watched a game and said, damn, this game's too long. Mm-hmm. Never have. I get it with kids. I understand that part of it. But that's what's so pure about this game is there's no time limits. But, I know the game's changing. We'll see how it goes. It's funny. It's kind of a different argument. They want to see hits and home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do that? People want to see offense. but they want less time.
Yeah, and I think baseball's Todd is just trying to do what the NBA is doing and try to change things to appeal to the fans. But I think these things kind of are so minuscule and so minor that in the end it's not a dramatic difference.
Well, and it's like when I threw that tweet, I've had 400 likes, but there's only two kind of discussions why they don't like a long game.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to say, I really don't understand. Someone says, well, they're pleasing the masses. I don't think baseball fans as a whole complain about the length of a game.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. Watching a baseball game, if you're not a true, true fan, is boring. Mm-hmm. I mean, but it's kind of like hockey. I watch hockey on TV, but I'd much rather be at the game. It's not even close.
Oh, yeah.
Football, I'd rather be it on TV just so I can have a cheap beer and see the replays.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, hockey, I have to be at the game.
Oh, you gotta
be there. I can't watch a regular season hockey game on TV. Baseball, I grew up with it, so I could watch that every. I could watch 160 minute game.
Our family still watches on TV, but as an average fan, they probably don't like. You know, it gets a little long, but that's what's so pure about the game. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it does make any difference. Maybe it cuts a couple of minutes off the average game time. I respect them trying to change things. I just don't know how much it'll do.
I agree. I agree. I mean, you're not going to change a half hour, and that's what really it looks like. People don't want to get home at 12, or, mm-hmm. you know. I said, let's start them a little earlier, but then I get because people getting off work trying to get to the game. I just don't think there's a problem. If you're only going to change 5-6 minutes, I mean, what does that really do? Nothing.
Exactly. Todd Pratt joining us for a couple more minutes. I just want to do a quick rapid fire before we let you go, Todd.
Sounds good.
Favorite manager? That you played.
That's a tough one because they're all different. I mean, really. I could explain all of them. I mean, Fregosi and Bobby Cox were men's men. They leave the clubhouse alone. Larry Bowe was a fiery guy. I loved it. Some people hated that. Bobby B was a very intelligent guy, a little confident, that people didn't like. Jim Riggleman, even when I was that little bit of the Cubs, young manager, good. You know, and that's one thing. I kind of put them all together, and that's what I try, me as being a manager now, what I learned from them. Tear them apart a little bit and put them all back together, and that's what I try to do.
Best
Charlie Manuel, awesome.
Charlie Manuel,
good about him. I've known him probably the longest because I was Rule 5 for Cleveland when I was 20, and he was there. So they all have different things.
All right, One name. Who was your best teammate? Your best like leader as a teammate?
There's a lot. Tim Hudson, Lenny Harris, Pat Burrell.
Pat Burrell. Wow. Okay, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Who was your
we were close.
Who was your funniest teammate?
Oh. Probably Pat Burrell. He's a funny guy. He can really crack you.
Pat Burrell. All right. All right, Todd Pratt, former Mets catcher, Phillies and Braves and all those teams, the Cubs, all the NLEs covered, and now he will be managing as they get underway in a couple of weeks here, the Greensboro Grasshoppers with the Marlins. Hey, Todd, appreciate you coming on, man. Glad you are indeed the real Todd Pratt, and good luck this season.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate having me.
All right, man. Take care.
All right.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.